This is the third hour, the afternoon class, December the 17th. We've just had a demonstration of lifting. I want to point out that I made too big a step there once. And point out that I did a couple of steps without mock-ups between them. And if you were watching there and observing it, you found out that we were getting just a little bit less action. That you noticed that, by the way. I said suddenly made you pick up four fingers without first making you pick up three fingers. Now, what did you feel about that?
It just seemed to be solid, like.
Yeah, it seemed to be a little bit solid. Yeah, we've gone up to three, you see. Four. As it was, we just put a little more time on that than should have been. We jumped too big a step. And, of course, that we covered immediately. We were very shortly back in the running again. We just went back and picked up the three-step, did the three-step very thoroughly, and then came on to the four-step, and four-step then. How'd they feel the second time? Think that much lighter, you see. Another thing is, what did you feel about doing mock-ups in between? Did you want to keep getting the show on the road, or what about the mock-ups? What was your reaction?
No, it was good.
Hmm? It relaxed me. Yeah, that's right. That's right. Because he, in there pitching and agreeing with the real universe, instead of the actual universe, and so he takes a look at the actual universe, and throws himself some mock-ups there, and all of a sudden he says, well, not so bad. And you got released from tension. So, actually, your preacher will benefit if you did two or three mock-ups between every single step. But there is no reason why you should have to do this to any great extreme. There's nothing compulsive about this. But it just so happens that if you're making them agree with the real universe, why, it just goes faster if you'll throw some mock-ups in there. Feels a little bit relaxed and feels a little bit happier about the thing. So, this process will continue from four fingers, of course, to the hand, and then both hands, and then we'll continue up to the elbows and the arms, and then we'll wiggle one foot in one direction, and then wiggle the other foot in the other direction, and then push the feet together, and then pull the feet apart, and then made one toe tap. Just lifted the toe and let it fall a few times. Then we would have hooked the line on and possibly made him pull his foot off the platform edge. Anything like that, so it just dropped a little bit. And then we would have finally picked it up at the knee and let it swing back. I mean, they pick it up so it bent at the knee, you see. And then he started to look at me fascinated. What's the matter? That sound hard?
No, get the idea how it works.
Well, there's nothing hard about it. I mean, as long as you follow the road, it becomes just ridiculously easy. Now, just exactly where the end of this is, I won't tell you at this time. I'll let you find out exactly what happens when you finally got a guy so he can boost his body around. One of these days, he's going to go down the street with these hands together in front of me, like this. And go down the street about 6 feet off the sidewalk at about 15 or 20 miles an hour. Hands pressed very reverently before his chin, his feet stayed together, and very reverent expression on his face, and scooting down the street like mad. Now, at any time this power action that you're getting there seems to fail, honestly, you can do that, you know. I'm trying to encourage you in a line. Any time this power action seems to be slacking off or something, that's sort of, you've just done that fact. You've just agreed too long with the real universe, so you sit down. It isn't that you draw power, you see, out of the mock-ups or anything strange or peculiar like that. It's just that concentration on the real universe gets a fellow back below a certain point into flows. And he gets back to obedience of flows because he's finding flows useful. And he gets back, he wants to use them, therefore he's obedient to them. And he gets up above the break point, however. And above this point, he doesn't get it there. But you have to get him just so high before it really has no further effect. Fine. I was going to make a little note that I was talking to you about a wheel. Sort of an all roads lead to Rome thing. All roads lead to Rome. And very pertinent when it comes to lifting or treading on perception. These things, as you well realize, depend upon force. And force is random effort. And effort is directed force. Now, you understand, of course, while I was working this pre-clear, that we were using beams. We're still using falls. When I told you get above the break point, that's a very specific point. It's the point where he simply gets wet out away from something, and he says, jump. And it, of course, promptly jumps. He doesn't use a beam, but he makes it jump with a postulate. Instead of taking the intermediate step, of throwing beams on it. You feel it? It's the easy. And you drill him up along that line. So at last, to make a finger lift, you wouldn't go over and throw a beam on the finger. Anything else, you would just say, lift. And it lifts. Fascinating happens. So all roads lead to Rome here. And Rome in this case is force. Now, force is interpreted by many people to mean rough, mean, ornery, misused material. So, that, however, force is merely energy with some direction. And effort is very closely monitored force, that's all. Now, I don't care whether you're pushing a paintbrush over a canvas or anything of the sort, there's a gradient of force there. And you get somebody who's very shy of force because he gets an aberration because people have used too much force on him and he has used too much force on others. And what do you get? You get a fellow who won't use force to push a paintbrush over a piece of canvas. Too much protest then along this line becomes aberrative. Inhibits an individual's willingness to handle energy. When an individual is unable to handle energy, is unwilling to handle energy, same thing, unwilling, unable, unwilling to handle energy, the next thing that comes about is he becomes an effect of energy. The use of force is idiocy. It's just pure idiocy to accomplish everything across the boards. But if you're going to handle a material object, you are actually handling solid energy. A material object is solid energy. It is made of energy. It is therefore composed of force vectors. If you're unwilling to handle force, and you're unwilling to handle energy, you will become shy of handling, just automatically become shy of handling material objects, acquiring them, getting rid of them, placing them around, or anything of the sort. And oddly enough, an individual's perceptions turn off to the degree that he's unwilling to handle energy. How did that kill? See, there's even energy in markups. You put energy in markups. Very light type of energy, it doesn't bear much resemblance to force. So the break point, of course, is up above the level of the use of force. No state really can survive from the moment that it begins to employ broadly and without much direction force. The use of force as the sole method of accomplishment of an end ends in death. Because it brings about a dependence upon force, but at the same time, there doesn't seem to be at this time, and when there is, we'll find it, if there ever is, a shortcut on horse. The road out is the road to home. When you're below the level, but I'm willing to handle force, you can become subjected to force, and as you come up the line, you'll find it easier to handle things in terms of energy. And handling things in terms of energy then brings you about 19 times up the tone scale. That's the fastest way I know to increase tone, you see. Increase perception. You notice, how are you feeling there about halfway? All right?
Yeah.
All right. You keep bringing a guy up the tone scale, bringing him up the tone scale. Sometimes you'll notice his tone change. He'll start to demonstrate some new strata on the tone scale and so forth. Just feed him some mock-ups on it. He looks kind of angry or something like that, so you say, oh, God, let's make him do something destructive. Let's make him hold on to something. Let go in a mock-up. And that shifts his tone again. If he jams somewhere on the tone scale, he was pressed. All right? We don't have to do that. I mean, it'll work out automatically. So, unfortunately, force is the barrier. The sinister barrier. And the trick is to get up above the level where you accomplish things without the use of force, or what we commonly call energy, or force. And in order to get to that point where you can handle things made out of energy without handling them with your manufactured energy, you, of course, are above the break point. And that's the point. Well above that point is the operating state. He hangs up as long as he depends on force. So we see this thing called force here. Let's see how many things go through force. And here we have the first and foremost emphasis. Irresponsibility is first manifested by an abandonment of force. I am to blame is an abandonment of force. It means I use force for the wrong thing, and therefore I'm to blame. And I'm bad cause, and we don't want to be bad cause, so we'll abandon that. And next thing you know, the fellow's very irresponsible. Because what's responsibility when it comes down to that? It's willingness to own, or act, or use, or be. And lower on the tone scale, all those things have to go through the band called force. That you could also call the effort band of the tone scale. Person gets below that effort band, no matter, they can still think, they can still act and so forth, but they're not willing to handle material object, and they become irresponsible for them, things around them start to become rather unnasty. And so we go through force, and we get responsibility. Over here, an individual who is having a serious time, with causation, and is responding to any kind of a flow. You see these fellows, we've got everything packed in. Step four, kind of we're trying to resolve with step four. They're just so subject to flows that what they get, they can't get rid of. What they have gotten rid of, they can't get. They're being flows. And so, they're in effect. And we have this up here. Through force. And out of force. And we get cause. Cause, responsibility, actually are not on a parity. Cause is, if anything, higher than responsibility. Kind of going this in any old way here. Now, because knowledge and data is contained on energy and is as forceful on an individual
as the individual is unwilling to face facsimiles, then data becomes composed of forms.
Facsimiles.
Pictures. Pictures of forms. If he can't handle forms, he can't handle the pictures. If he can't handle the pictures, he can't handle data. And if he can't handle data, he gets into that state known as unknowing. And there's nothing worse than the unknown if you postulate that there's something you ought to know and you can that's contained in the facsimile. That is to say, a memory of some sort. So you get, I know not, either. And that goes where? That goes right straight in the force. And coming out of the force, yes. What? I know.
Interesting.
Now, of course, an individual becomes as individual as he is high on the tone scale, and he is as individual as he can act by his own self-determinism, and he is only as individual as he can act by his own self-determinism. But if he can be made into an effect, if he can be made into an object, if he can be solidified somehow or other in space and given a label, he is identified. And being identified, of course, he becomes an object, and an object is an individual, and that, of course, is the state called I am not. And I am not, lived through force, comes up here through, of course, I am. Very simple. Now, because every messed object is interested in identification and is not interested in differentiation, every one of these objects, why, of course, you get the ability to be everyone is on the upper side of this wheel,
and being in sort of everybody's valence is on the bottom side of the wheel,
so we get the fact he's really nobody. The best identified person, the most inimitable person, is nobody.
Really, that's true.
So we get that nobody, everybody. Now let's look around on the tone scale again. And what other ones do we find? We find down at the bottom of the scale, succumb. And that comes up through. And becomes, of course, survive. Now, how did that do that? Well, that's because when an object is interested in survival, it is not aware of the fact it is immortal. And if it is not aware of the fact it's immortal, it is because it obeys what? Force. And if it obeys force or obeys force laws, it naturally can be made to succumb. By what? Force. And so force has this corrosive effect upon the individuality, which brings it down at last into the individual identity, so-called, and it finally corrodes in, and you get that. Now, from this, you could assume that force had something to do with time, couldn't you? And, of course, that's true. Force does have a lot to do with time, and also, force, as they overlook most often, has a lot to do with space, and when you have force and space, or energy and space, you get an object, and naturally you have, which comes up here on the tone scale. We've got have coming up here now, and have comes up along the line, and of course force is energy. And it goes up through energy and comes up here to what naturally would be. All through force again. Now, an object can't perceive. We can have perceptions engraved on it, but it can't look. And so we get down at the bottom here, of course, no perception. And up at the top, we get officer. Just to that degree. So your thinking here being done in terms of energy, where the force level is, down here we get it done in terms of for you. And midway between those two points, it is done in terms of looking at all facsimiles, just about energy and force here. We have the thing operating on a
postulate basis, those things.
And we get memory. So up here above force, of course, is the gradient scale of facsimiles. And here he's remembering more or less by flows or pervasion by flows. And up here he's just simply good memory. And this again goes through what? Over here, up here. That's a wheel. A lot of other things on that wheel. But the main thing that's on that wheel is what I will draw now, which is this big curve over here on the right side. And this big curve is cycle of action. So it starts up here with B, flows through energy, and ends with an object, or starts up there and ends with stop, has change in the middle. So force brings about change. When force is deployed, it always brings about change in one sort or another, which inevitably ends in a static. There actually is a picture of your wheel that has to do with all the things, more or less, that we have been talking about as we went through this. Of course. This picture. Now, there are two ways those arrows can fly. I instinctively put them in that direction. You can take these spinning factors and put them in the other direction. When you put them in the other direction, you get the messed universe. When you put them in this direction, you get freedom. Those things which people instinctively resist really will eventually wind them up being an object, an identity, and fighting force or using force as a sole means is no good. But because that road leads through force, leads through energy, you make sure that your natural instinct to avoid it does not persuade you as a pre-clear to inhibit the efforts of your auditor just out of chatter to rationalize about force. He's not trying to make you into a single force object or something that will use only force. There isn't any epic on a force level. It's almost shot. And as an auditor, boy, don't you ever let your own willingness to avoid force inhibit your restoring to an individual his right to be free. There is the picture, and the stable point that we're going to mark up here, the great big S, is in this area. And that great big S is an operating thing. And there you've got it. Now, some
day somebody's going to pick up a wheel like that, and they're going to say, this was a mystic symbol which was used. They find this old universe floating around, and you just explode a few pieces of it or something of the sort. And it's still got pieces floating around in little chunks of space that sort of drift around. And you'll probably, somebody is still trying to argue with somebody else that he ought to go back and remove these navigational menaces in case anybody started thinking in terms of you use course in order to create objects which you then rule, and the best way to do it is to create objects out of live, living, thinking beings. Anybody who starts on that line, right? He's in bad shape. Somebody will be explaining why somebody might get the going again on this thing. Anything, when you see the vector go down, anywhere on these wheels, when you see that vector go down, rocks and shoals, on this lower portion, force down, when you see that vector turn around, you're going to wind up with succumb, defect, irresponsibility, have not, I am not, I know not. When you turn the vector around, start to force him free clear, he winds up, succumb, I am not, so on. Of course, a little bit different using force on him, simply using the punchline. We say, all right, well, let's go through this and let's be still about this whole thing. All right, let's take it easy now. Yeah, using force. You're appealing to his reason. He knows you're not going to take a gun to him. But at first, he's only quivering because he is afraid you will take a gun to him. So much force has been employed against him. And the road out there is the road through energy. And I mark force up there not because we ought to call it force, but simply to point out that force is a railroad tie across the track, and one which must be removed from the track for the pre-clear, because it's a dividing line. Now, somebody else could look at that graph, by the way, and he could say, now you see, what you do is you're all those lower things, and to get better, you start using force. And if you use force, that brings you up into a beautiful state of I am and be and all that. And therefore, the best way to do this is to use force on everybody and accomplish it all by force. Heil Hitler! And as I said in the book, I heard a rumor lately that Adolf Hitler was dead. Because the Rus. You gotta be able to handle it, willing to handle it, willing to buck through it, willing to employ it, find out what it'll do. And this is a major point. How do you get a pre-clear to handle something that falls in the can't category on the machine? You make mock-ups of it, and you handle it. You can actually make mock-ups of force so you can handle it. But control and handling of anything which is the thing which bars the road, is the modus operandi out. It isn't, at this moment at least, a rocket ride over all of the obstacles. You pick them up, and you throw them off the track. And you don't, but the pre-clear does. You just tell him to make him. Fear of force will keep him depressed. Actually, when a person's able to throw his body around, his fear of force lessens very markedly. And his fear lessens very markedly. That is asking, just offhand, do you feel any attitude shift? You don't have to. Do you feel any attitude shift? I mean, as a result of this lifting we were doing? You don't feel an attitude shift. Did it make you feel any better about anything?
Yeah.
You didn't hold?
Yeah, it showed me that I've been out for quite a while. And, you know,
yeah?
Yeah.
How do you mean that?
Well, when you remember, while we were processing, the first thing we used to do is to put each other up against the wall and then run us, you know, run through the, through that, when we get the, that, what's the wall?
Uh-huh.
Said the first place was outside, so he says, do that. So, at first, I used to walk the rack all around the body, and then after I'd been processed a little more, so I didn't have to wrap around the body, just be around it.
Mm-hmm.
And then it slipped, you know, I didn't realize it, and now suddenly it all came by.
Mm-hmm. How would you feel if you could pick your body up with the scruff of the neck, about a foot in the air?
Oh, that'd be fine. I don't think that's too far away.
You don't, huh?
No.
Oh, no. Good. All right. Yeah, in the second half hour, let's go, what little is left. Let me go right straight through into what I say beams. He's using a beam there. I want anybody around here to look inside his head and see the front of his forehead. Who's looked around and seen the front of his forehead? Hmm? You seen the front of your forehead? You've been out, though. Okay, who's seen the front of his forehead and hasn't been out? Take a look right now. Can you see the front of your forehead? And you, now I'm not talking about this side. I'm talking about this side, the back side, inside. You see the inside of your forehead? Have you been out?
Yeah.
All right, sit down.
Sure, I haven't.
Sit down.
This is step two.
All right. Let's just take a look at the inside of your forehead there. Got it?
Not very much reality on the
radio. That's all right. Would you rather look at it? Well, I'll tell you what you do. Let's mark up right there in the inside of your forehead a dragon.
Okay.
Now, get him licking his chops.
Okay.
Now, make him get some a very effeminate mannerism as he licks his chops.
Okay.
Now, get him getting very ladylike about licking his chops.
Okay.
Getting turning pink.
Mm-hmm.
Now get the difference he conceives between himself and other dragons.
Okay.
All right, now let's take him, hang him out there about, maybe a foot over to the right, turning blue, hang him about a foot over to the right there.
Okay.
Got him out there?
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's turn him upside down and hang his tail on a nail.
Okay.
Okay. Got him there?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now, right inside the forehead there, let's put a great big mouse trap.
Not sure where it's located.
Not sure where it's located. But it's plastered on the inside of the forehead. Stand it up on edge and make it scowl at you. That's probably better.
No luck.
Don't like that mouse trap? Well, put it way out on the other side of the room out there.
Okay.
Now put one just this side of it.
Okay.
And one just this side of it.
Okay.
All right, now make the one you just put down snap hungrily.
Okay.
Now make those three of them jump up and eat up all of these seats and all of the students.
Okay.
Huh? I get them getting a stomachache. Then explain it to each other, it's because the gods have affected them.
Okay.
And get them lying down and dying. I have three mice come in and grab the mouse traps and lug them off to the other side of the room.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I think those mouse traps is huge and the mice very tiny.
Mm-hmm.
All right, make the mouse traps even bigger and the mice even smaller.
Okay.
All right, I get the mice eating the mouse traps.
That's quite a strain. I got traps here the size of the room, mice
okay.
The size of peas.
Okay, that's all right. I didn't leave them out. Why do you make them do it? They say they can't do it?
Oh, I got one of them on already. Well, how's it done? I don't know.
All right.
Okay.
Now, take those mice and turn them into thetans.
Okay.
And have them come swinging over and going round and round your head.
Okay.
Have one of them take a saw and saw the top of your head off.
Okay.
Look inside to see if you're there.
Okay.
Have him tell you hello.
Okay.
Pop your head back off.
Okay.
Now I have them go away.
Okay.
Lock up another statement and put it in yesterday.
Okay.
Okay, take a look at the inside of your forehead. Look at those horrible eyes staring in at you. Once in a while, freak you, okay? I don't see anything, but I keep feeling like these horrible eyes are peering at me.
No, I get one purple spot.
Got a purple
spot in the forehead there.
Yeah. Well, let's examine that purple spot real good. Is there another purple spot there?
No, it seems to be concentric circles and they merge in.
Oh, yeah? Make it into a pool of water.
Not very good.
I'll turn blue. I'll turn red. Turn it green.
Okay.
Got it better now?
Green, okay.
All right, now turn on a tap over by the radiator and let it run and drain the pool. I'm using much more mock-up than you would use in step two. Got it going?
I still got my purple spot.
Okay, still got a purple spot. Just can you turn it red?
More red than it was.
Okay, turn it white.
Look.
Do I like that? Turn it white.
No, it just doesn't turn.
Well, it turns red.
Kind of. A little more red than it was.
All right, now let's turn it black.
Gets rather dark purple. There's a black now. That's purple.
turn it purple.
Good.
Now turn it purpler.
Make it more purple than it is?
It seems to shift a little bit between kind of red and green.
What is that more purple?
Can't seem to settle on the purple.
Okay, got it. Got it. Okay, now just let it be what it will. Let's just go to what you would do as an auditor, as we said, following on. Let's just go right straight through the steps of SOP issue 5. And let's be 2 feet back of your head. What do you got?
No, I wouldn't be sure what it was.
Wouldn't I? All right, let's just put a beam straight against the inside of your forehead there. And just put a beam in there and just give it a show. Show that forehead there a couple of feet forward.
That purple spot's about 2 feet ahead of me, but...
The purple spot's about 2 feet ahead of you.
Yeah, but where I am, I don't know.
Uh-huh. Okay. Did it go away from you 2 feet?
Yes. About that far away.
Well, make it 1 foot ahead of you.
Okay.
Make it 3 feet ahead of you.
Okay.
Well, let's be 2 feet higher than it.
Kind of a sensation of looking down at it, but...
Okay, now be 2 feet lower than it.
Kind of an odd idea of being above me.
Okay. Now let's be a little bit further away from it.
I guess I'm probably about 6 or 8 feet away.
Okay. Things get running plainer to you? I'm not asking you to look at the surroundings. I mean, just, do you have any more feeling of certainty?
Well, I'm not sure whether the white spot's pushed out that way or whether I pushed that way.
Oh, is that what's mixing you up?
I don't know.
Why don't you just push yourself now? Push yourself out a little further.
Kind of an odd feeling of being unsupported.
Oh, yeah?
I don't know where the hang I am yet.
Well, let's mock up somebody falling.
Okay.
Now, let's mock up a cat falling.
Okay.
A dog falling.
Okay.
A bird falling.
Okay.
A cow falling.
Okay.
I have a horse fall upward.
Okay.
I have him fall downward. I'm stopped falling.
Okay.
Okay. Mark up a green wall.
Okay.
Mark up a body.
Okay.
Change the color of the wall.
Okay.
Change the color of the body.
Okay. Throw him out the window. Okay.
Okay. Now, how do you feel about it?
Good.
Good. You got any better idea of location? Do you have any little tiny paint or partial Vizio on anything?
No.
Well, there's the triple spot.
You got a triple spot. Let us turn into a golf ball and knock it away.
Doesn't knock, huh?
No,
doesn't turn into a golf ball either.
Doesn't. Okay, I'll tell you what we'll do. Tell you what we'll do. Turn it red.
Got a pink?
Okay, deepen the pink. Lighten the pink. Deepen it. Now keep it from being scarlet.
It really requires effort.
Really? But you didn't manage it.
It got scarlet on me.
I'm going to throw another step in here just for the hell of it. Standard operating procedure is 1 and 10.
Try not to be a foot back of your head.
Do it. Well, I put forth a little effort, feel a little tension, but nothing else.
Okay. Now, let's just pick up a point out in front of your body.
Okay.
All right, hold it still.
Seem to get a kind of odd visio looking at my leg.
Oh, yeah? All right, what's this spot there? You got the spot?
Well, that jumped out and I told you about my leg.
Let's put it back there.
It's doing a fair job of sticking around, isn't it?
Doing a fair job of it, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, is it holding completely still?
Not completely. So I wanted to get it down to a precise spot, too.
Let's not worry about it.
Okay.
You had an impression looking at your leg suddenly, huh?
Kind of.
You know, once in a blue moon, you don't find the freak here. Now, this is outside of the markups, which I was doing there, really in some randomity, and outside of introducing negative exteriorization, which you don't have money anymore. But it's a technique. This is standard so far, and I'm not doing it as well as it is. I could actually work him on any of these steps until he was exterior. I just want him to keep going. But the easiest, fastest way to do it is just go right on to the steps. Let's take the old homestead now.
Okay.
All right, let's make a whole ring of them all the way around you, about 20 feet away from you. That's faster, because he got it fast. That's faster, that's more of them than he would normally end up for. You got a few?
Yeah, kind of dumb, but I got it.
All right, now this, you think back of you too?
Yeah.
All right, let's start taking them then from in back of you and start sticking them in. stacking them into yourself. Take them in. One after the other.
Okay.
Got them all?
Mm-hmm.
Why don't you ring up another ring of them? Now, let's let one just drift out there about 5 or 10 feet in front of you. Show any tendency to do anything?
Yeah, it flipped over on its top, isn't it?
Towards you or away?
It rolled over.
Towards you?
Yeah, towards me, I guess.
What do you know? All right, now let's just stack all those you just put out there and stack them in. Just bring them all up and stick them in. I go right on now with a step four. I'll do this much more rapidly than you would ordinarily do it.
Okay.
Is it getting easier to do?
Yeah.
Okay. Watch, throw them all out there in a circle again and turn them purple.
Okay.
All right. Put cowboys on each one of them.
Okay.
Change the cowboys to Indians.
Okay.
Now I have the houses develop legs and gallop in a wide circle around you.
Okay.
Now speed up the gallop. What's happening?
Well, they're going around me. They're gradually shifting. They're going around out here.
Now, let's put it out there where they belong.
What do you mean? Okay.
Now, let's bring them in on your lap. Let's pile them all in on your lap.
My cups are rather dim, not very substantial, but they're there.
Got them on your lap?
Yep.
Okay, got them on your lap. Condense them into one house.
Okay.
Yeah, one house?
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's take this house and turn it into a castle.
Okay.
And put it way out on the other side of the room.
Okay.
Put it in yesterday. Mark up a woman.
Okay.
Another one.
Mm-hmm.
Another one.
Okay.
Another one. What are they doing, by the way?
This time they're perfectly still.
They are?
Yep.
Well, I'm turning around and walk away from you.
Things that walk out and then slip back to the 50.
All right, take them one after the other and just throw them into your body.
Okay.
Any difficulty with that?
No.
All right, now just mark up all the women you have just marked up. We don't care how sloppy. We're not interested in identification on them at all. Sloppy, this markup. Every woman you ever knew on the whole track for the last 74 trillion years and has picked up in big circles and started throwing them into the body, and it's just a moment before they come in, they seem to stick, turn red and blue. Or turn red and blue, then they'll slip in.
Was it to be done individually, or is it?
And just at any time, any moment that you get one out here who doesn't want to come in, make three more like it. And the last one that you made probably snap in. Now, let's just go at it this, and so the last you made a snap in, then take in the other two. I'm not trying to set this up on an automatic basis. I'm just setting it up as a routine. We've got a lot of dames to handle here, and we don't want to waste any time with these dames. Because dames, after all, are dames. And let's mock these things up in a huge crowd standing behind you and in front of you, on each side of you.
Okay.
Now, let's put a very big balcony and so forth above you. Full of them. Now, a huge square of them below you, full of them.
Okay.
Now, I start pulling them in from all sides and descriptions, one by one or 10 by 10. I don't care. Let's get them all.
But get them as far as there's no personal identity there at all. I couldn't pick out one out of the group. I tried to.
Did you get them all?
All right. They're still stuck out here.
They're still stuck?
Yeah.
Turn them all green.
Okay.
Turn them all blue.
Okay.
For every one of those, make two more.
Okay.
For every one of those, make two more.
Okay.
There'd be quite a few, then.
Quite a few.
Turn them red. Turn blue.
Okay.
What's the matter?
Having trouble keeping them blue.
Oh, yeah, I'm trouble keeping them blue. I'm turning back to natural color.
It moved a considerable distance away from me. Matter so at least.
Oh, it moved away from you?
Yeah.
No kidding. Well, I'll pick them up and stuff them into the body. Get going on this. Quite a few things, sir.
Okay.
They working okay?
I think they're inside.
You think so? Well, let's pack them down.
I haven't got them out there.
Huh?
I haven't got them out there. I haven't come in.
Okay, now let's pack them into the body a little tighter. Kind of crowd is down.
Yeah, but they just packed and then they went out and then they're pushing them in again.
Yeah, let's get them in there real good now. All right, now the dickens with those. Let's mark them all up again. Get them out there around you. Lock them all up again.
pick them out as individuals much better than I could before.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, put a little more detail.
What ribbons flying over their heads?
Okay.
Now, make a couple more for everyone you've got there.
Doesn't seem to come too good.
They get more of them?
No.
Why? Were you two so interested in them becoming suddenly individual?
They have lost that again, become a mass.
Oh, and this is not quite as desirable.
I don't know.
We got all marked up there as a mass. Now just turn them right.
This markup's losing a lot of its detail and reality.
Oh, yeah?
It goes on.
Getting sort of red, though.
Kind of, yeah.
All right, now just let them be whatever shade they want to be and stomp them in. Get them in.
Okay.
Hang them down.